you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, good friends. Thank you for joining us for this latest edition of the Bill Press Pod. Good to see you. Well, in Washington, the 118th Congress is off and running with Democrats in control of the Senate by one vote and Republicans also by a slim margin in control of the House. On the surface, that looks like a recipe for disaster, with Senate Democrats pushing for tough legislation on police reform, climate change, protecting women's rights, expanding access to health care, and House Republicans wanting to do little else but investigate Hunter Biden. But could it be just the opposite? Could both parties decide to put their differences aside and actually get things done in order to have something to brag about in 2024? In other words, what can we really expect from this broken and divided Congress? Today, we put that question to a man who knows Congress better than most of the people who serve there, having covered Congress since the mid-80s. Carl Hulse is chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. Carl Hulse, good to reconnect with you, and welcome. Welcome to the Bill Press Pod.
Thanks for having me. A lot going on.
Oh, yeah, indeed. So, Carl, you have seen many a Congress come and go. And we look at this 118th Congress. Let's just start off. I mean, one seat majority in the Senate for Democrats. What is it? 10 slim majority in the House for Republicans. Is this a recipe for disaster or a recipe for getting anything done?
I don't think it's a recipe for getting anything done. That's for sure. You know, we'll have to see if it's a disaster. You know, if the government defaults because there's no debt limit increase, I would say that would be classified as a disaster. It's just these parties are so far apart. I don't see any big legislation. And you know, the Congress had a good legislative record the last Congress. So
you can't
really count on something like that. But, you know, this does feel like 1995 to me again. You know, a very aggressive new House Republican majority, combative, comes in, but there's a Democratic president. And, you know, they're just going to fight it out. I mean, I've always think I've seen it all here, Bill, after all these years. I've never seen 15 votes to get elected speaker. So there's always something new. Kevin McCarthy is in a, you know, he's in a very, very difficult spot. And I just don't see much legislation happening. You know, there's just not much agreement, but there are certain things have to happen, right? You have to increase the debt limit. You have to fund the government somehow. So they'll work on that. There'll maybe be some smaller legislative initiatives. Actually, the Farm Bill is up. That could happen. It's, you know, that's a more of a geographic fight in some ways than a political fight. But I expect mainly, you know, a lot of fury and fireworks as they do these investigations and try and score political points, but we're not going to see big bills.
So, you know, there are a lot of similarities to 1995, and we remember Newt Gingrich, but isn't one big difference that Newt had more of a united caucus and was a stronger leader than Kevin McCarthy?
I think Newt was definitely a stronger leader, and, you know, they'd been out of power for 40 years, so they wanted to do something. But, you know, I don't know how united they were, Bill, because if you remember, it wasn't too long until they bounced Newt out of there.
Right.
So, I think Newt, he was, Newt, for all his flaws, and I think, you know, we can agree that he had some flaws there. He was a sort of a visionary guy.
And
had big ideas that he wanted to do. Kevin McCarthy, I think, is more of someone who just, he wanted to be speaker, and he has accomplished that. He's a little bit like the dog who caught the car, I think.
Yeah. Now what the hell do I do? I remember somebody who worked for Newt at the time said, you know, this guy comes in every morning and he just sits down and he rattles off like 15 big ideas that he had since he left office. Yeah. I mean, left the office the day before, right? Yeah. And he said, you know, maybe one of them, maybe two of them were worth pursuing. But I mean, he just was spouting big ideas, kind of things he wanted to do all the time.
Yeah, he had too many big ideas, right? And that's what happened. Right. His members are like, well, you have so many ideas. You told us we were going to gain seats and we lost seats. You know, speaking of ideas, I think one thing this Republican majority has is some of their ideas are great when they're in the minority and they sound great and they motivate their base and nobody takes them seriously. But when you're in, all of a sudden those ideas, even though they're not going to happen, become more real. And this is what you're seeing, like with the 30% sales tax that is a talking point for some of these conservative Republicans. That sounds great when no one's listening except your voters, and you say, I'm going to get rid of the IRS and we're going to go with a consumption tax. The Democrats are having a field day with that, right? It's like, hey, these Republicans are going to charge you 30% on every single thing you buy. Yeah. And, you know, it's ideas like that. We're going to overturn the bills that the Democrats passed. Well, guess what? The Democrats passed bills that reined in the drug companies and capped insulin and made health care a little more stable under Obamacare. So you start talking about getting rid of those and the Democrats are just going to pound you. And they are. Chuck Schumer every day is, you know, show us your plan. Show us your plan. And it's different when you're in power.
Yeah. Well, there's another idea that you have written about in the New York Times that it's an oldie but goodie, maybe. I'm not sure how good it is. And that is term limits. This is also something they run on. I mean, how realistic is that?
Zero. But it's you're exactly right. This is another one of those things like we're going to term limit. And then, you know, they have to vote on it. It's like, well, I don't really want to term limit myself. Sorry. And it's just, you know, it's one of these things where it's a great headline, but the reality of it just isn't there. I mean, and you're referring to that story. Ted Cruz is pushing that in the Senate. It's 12 years. And so I said to him, I go, well, you're about to finish your 12th year. Does this mean you're going to term limit yourself? And of course, he's not going to term limit himself. He's loving the Senate. And he said, well, I'm not going to do it unilaterally. And I said, well, it would really send a great message if you quit and you would show that it you're serious about this. And of course, he wasn't serious.
No, I mean, that's really the joke of it. By the way, that would take a constitutional amendment, correct?
Yes, right. So you have to get 2/3 in both the House and the Senate, and then I think 38 states. You know, it's just not going to happen. There was a Supreme Court decision back in the 90s that said it would take a constitutional amendment. Because if you remember, the states have done this. A lot of states have.
Their
state legislatures. But the Constitution would require a change. It's just not going to happen. Mitch McConnell, he may be the most adamant foe I know of term limits. And he's always like, well, we have term limits. We call them elections. And, you know, in some ways it's true. It's always great for fired up conservatives. We got to get these guys out of Washington. I didn't look this up, but Newt, of course, had really pushed this. And he was abandoned by his fellow leaders. Tom DeLay at the time voted against it. And there was some commentary on the floor to the effect of when during your 18 years in Congress did you decide that 12 was enough? You know, it's an oldie but goodie for sure, but it's going nowhere.
Right. So you mentioned earlier what may be the first big test of getting anything done, or of McCarthy's ability to deliver on anything, is this debt ceiling fight. That we're already broke, but they've got games they can play to keep us going. So McCarthy has kind of drawn the line in the sand in terms of what he says has to happen. Here he is this week, Kevin McCarthy.
Very clear. We will not pass a clean debt ceiling here without some form of spending reform. So there'll never be a clean one.
Okay. So, Carl, what are they demanding right now? He also says, we're not going to cut Social Security on Medicare. Other Republicans are saying, oh, no, we have to. So,
yeah.
Where's this, heading?
So, he went to the White House and met with the president. And I think the Democrats were actually encouraged after that meeting. I think that that McCarthy recognizes what the political peril he is in, because if a default is going to tank your 401k, Republicans have 401ks too. And I don't think he wants to be blamed for that. So I think you're going to have a lot of semantics that go on here. They're going to have to try and pass a debt limit. And then over on the side somewhere, they're going to have some kind of negotiation about spending. And they're going to come up with something that will have some cuts. But, you know, once you take Social Security and Medicare off the table, there's only so much you can do. And then you also mm-hmm. have a lot of Republicans and quite a few Democrats who say, plus you can't touch defense spending. So, waste, fraud, and abuse, that's the great Washington mantra. And, that gets you like 0.1% or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know the real figure, but I'm sure there's waste in government, but there's not enough waste to balance the budget. I do think at the end of the day, you're going to get some attempts to have some sort of budget caps and restrict spending. And will it do it? I don't know. In 2011, I covered that very closely, the debt limit fight. And they did put some caps on. And what happened was everyone found they couldn't live within those caps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You'll have something along those lines. The White House and the Democrats will say, well, the debt limit isn't directly tied to this spending plan. The Republicans are going to say, well, we got what we wanted. And hopefully that all happens. That's the best possible result, because failure to do this is going to be cataclysmic. And, you have people saying, oh, the government will just keep paying its debts. And this is all, I mean, when you know how the markets are, it's optics. So the optics, even if you are paying your bills that you defaulted, are horrible. So hopefully they'll come to something. I think both sides, when they came out of that meeting, and I've talked privately now to people who were engaged in that, and they said it was a little more reassuring than they anticipated.
Well, the president himself reflected that the next morning. He appeared at the National Prayer Breakfast, ending with what I thought was an unusual pledge of almost good buddies between him and Kevin McCarthy. Here's the president.
Let's just sort of kind of join hands again a little bit. Let's start treating each other with respect. That's what Kevin and I are going to do. Not a joke. We had a good meeting yesterday. I think we got to do it across the board. Doesn't mean we're going to agree and fight like hell, but let's treat each other with respect.
Holding hands, Carl?
Well, I mean, that's Joe Biden, right? He's pals with everybody. And Kevin McCarthy is also pals with everybody. That's his personality. You know, Kevin McCarthy, this irritates him, but one of my colleagues once wrote a story comparing him to a golden lab. he also wants to get along and be liked. And I think, those are two guys who will try and find something. Kevin McCarthy isn't like one of these really angry, mean-spirited people, honestly. So, you know, between the two of them, hopefully they can get something done. And everybody has done this dance before. So they know that they have to get a result, but it is dangerous. Yeah. Actually, one of the dangerous things about this is because there's so little going on, everyone's just focused on this every day. And, you know, it's hard sometimes to get things done when that amount of tension is on you. So we'll have to see how they work it out. But, you know, that's just the beginning. They also have to somehow fund the government. And, you have four women for the first time who are in charge of the appropriations process. And, you know, they want to do some big spending bills. So this is going to be really a drawn out but interesting to watch situation.
So McCarthy had this past week what some people were saying his first big win, right? He fulfilled his promise to throw Representative Ilhan Omar off the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Yeah.
Like, really? I mean, what?
Yeah.
What did that accomplish?
Well, right? It accomplished a get even. This was to get even for what the Democrats did. And, you know, that's a dangerous thing that the Democrats did. And I'm not saying that there needs to be retribution, but when you do something in Congress, one party, the other party, when they come back, they always do it back to you and a little worse. That's what happened. I don't call it a win, but they call it a win because it looked like he was going to lose. He was. People were leaving him and saying they weren't going to support this because, it does look it's tit for tat is a bad thing. But, he was able to round him up. There's all sorts of little crazy things like this going on the Hill. They're fighting over whether you can have guns and you carry your gun into a committee hearing. And, you know, they're fighting about who can say the Pledge of Allegiance in the committee meetings. Like if you supported the January 6th insurrectionists, there's a lot of sideshows right now.
Right. That getting even, by the way, it wasn't just in the House. You mentioned Mitch McConnell earlier. Yeah. I was a little surprised that Mitch McConnell played this game too by knocking Rick Scott off of one of his committees.
There's no free lunch in Congress. You go after somebody and somebody who has power, they're going to get you the first chance they get. So what happened there was the Republicans were in kind of a tricky situation with their committee assignments because they remained in the minority, and they lost a seat. So the Democrats picked up a seat on a committee, but because they had retirements and other things, they have a lot of new members and they had to find committee spaces for them. And there just weren't many to go around. So Rick Scott of Florida had challenged Mitch McConnell. They clashed over the Senate campaign strategy. He went after him. So Mitch McConnell, when he got a chance, he knocked Rick Scott off the Commerce Committee. And I guarantee you he was very satisfied when he was doing that. You can almost see him sitting there, you know, the cat in the with the cream, you know, and I'm sure he took great joy in that.
All this talk about committees, I don't know. It seems to me that there was a day when some of these Senate committee chairs were really powerful, you know, or in the House, too. I mean, even Joe Biden, when he was head of Judiciary or head of Foreign Affairs or Wilbur Mills in Ways and Means. Are the committees as powerful today as they once were?
No, we're not even close. And that is a problem that a lot of members want to address. And it was one of the main reasons that McConnell was challenged. There were a lot of people who ended up supporting Mitch McConnell, obviously, but they still complained about the consolidation of power in the leadership offices, which really, going back to Newt, started in some ways with him. You know, he wanted to really centralize power in the speaker's office, and he diluted the power of the chairs. And Nancy Pelosi, you know, the adept politician that she was, she took that further. So much of what happens in Congress in the past almost 10 years has really been dictated just by the leadership, right? There's not time to do the bills. So they assemble these big bills and then they, you know, jam the members on them. A lot of members would like to see that change. And I think you're going to see with the appropriations process and some other legislation during this Congress, you're going to see an attempt to go back what is known on the Hill to go back to regular order. You know, I'm putting regular order in air quotes right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the old how a bill becomes law, or let take it through a committee, you know, do something like that. And then, you know, have the fight. People don't want to take tough votes on the floor so much anymore. And so these bills coming at the last minute, they don't have a lot of amendments. To their credit, the House Republicans are opening up the amendment process. And, you know, they say they're going to have open amendments and you're going to be able to, you know, debate on the floor. So far, they're doing that. But my experience is all new majorities say they're going to open up the amendment process. And then they realize it takes forever and it ends up with a lot of politically tough votes for their members. And then they go, OK, let's go back to the old way of doing things. No amendments. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. The Republicans don't have that many bills. So they're going to, you know, they've got to do something. But yeah, committee chairmanship isn't what it used to be. But we'll see if they're able to kind of reverse that.
Will we ever see another speaker in our lifetime as powerful as Nancy Pelosi?
Boy, I don't know. She, lover or hater, and there are people who do both.
Right. Yeah.
She really knew what she was doing. And she, you know, well, and you, through your relationship with her in California, you know, when she was chair of the party out there, that was a time when women weren't that prevalent in politics.
You bet. Right. You
know, and so coming out of that, she all you need to know about Nancy Pelosi and her effectiveness is how she's orchestrated her own exit. Have you ever seen anybody pull it off like she
did? God.
You know, a documentary, you know, unveiling the portrait, all these things and going on the floor. I mean, she orchestrated her exit like Cecil B. DeMille. You know, it was a thing of beauty to watch. And it's interesting to see her now in Congress, you know, as she's never going to be a regular rank and file person, but to sort of be in the back row with her friends from California.
Yeah.
But I will say, to me, she seems thrilled. I think it was a great burden, you know, not just the burden of raising $1 million a day, but the burden of having to organize everyone all the time. And she, of course, the horrible incident with her husband.
Right.
And, you know, but she seems, you know, the Maureen Dow did the big column on her and the headline was liberated and loving it. And I think that was really true.
All right. So we are just getting into the investigation phase of this new Congress with Jim Jordan already sending out his first subpoenas. We'll talk about that. That's coming up next. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with Carl Hulse to talk more about what we can expect from this 118th Congress. Today's podcast with Carl Hulse brought to you by the American Federation of Government Employees, members of the AFGE. They're the largest federal employees union under President Everett Kelly, over 750,000 strong, the unsung heroes of our government who keep the government agencies running, not only in Washington, D.C., but all across the country, serving us, the American people, every day. We thank them for their service and thank them for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
And we're back. Today's guest, Carl Hulse. He is the chief congressional correspondent for the New York Times. I consider him, I don't know whether it's official or not, the dean of the Congressional Press Corps, better known on Capitol Hill, of course, as the drummer for the band The Native Makers.
We just had a very successful gig a few nights ago, and we're back in business post COVID.
Successful gig, I might add, with my former business partner Paul Woodhull,
yes,
and my former producer Peter Ogburn. So
You're practically part of the band.
If you need a lead vocalist, maybe I'll be there next time, Carl.
we can always use a lead vocalist. Trust me.
All right, so let's talk. Well, first I got to ask you: does this new lineup in the Senate mean that Joe Manchin is not going to be the king of the Hill anymore?
It's interesting. I think his influence is somewhat reduced, but you see that he's trying to insert himself as a deal maker in the debt ceiling fights. Joe Manchin has a big decision to make. He needs to decide if he's going to run for re-election. He's going to have a really hard time out there in West Virginia in a presidential year. You know, Joe Biden's going to get about 2% of the vote in West Virginia. But I don't think he's made up his mind. So he's trying to figure out how to best position himself. But in a closely divided Senate, everyone is a kingmaker. And he likes to do it more publicly. Also, Senator Sinema, also another very interesting person to watch in the Senate. What is she going to do? She became an independent and but stayed with the Democrats in terms of committees. So they do have their 51-49. But she also has to decide whether she's going to run. And the Democrats have to decide if they're going to support her or a Democratic alternative. So, these are 2024 is not far off, right? And these are decisions that have to be made soon.
So back to the part of the one part of the GOP agenda in the House that we certainly heard about and promise is going to happen is unending investigations. Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, impeaching Alejandro Mayorkas, and then the weaponization committee. I mean, first of all, even having a committee with a title, weaponization of the federal government.
I don't know who thought that was a good idea. Just because you're kind of giving away the the story there, right? We've already decided there was weaponization, and now we're going to figure out who did it. There's going to be a lot of investigations. This is what they promised their constituents, But a lot of it is it's conspiracy theory stuff. And if you have a real congressional investigation with real investigators, you're going to find out that some of this stuff is not real. Mm-hmm. And, it's hard to say how are they going to sustain this. And also one thing that's occurred to me as I watched this whole thing unfold, and we both have been at this for a while, real congressional investigations are very difficult and require a high degree of expertise. Mm-hmm. And, I saw one of the Republicans said, we're going to have 70 investigations. They'll be lucky to have seven because they're real work. So if they just go and do headlines and, we're having a committee hearing and we're going to bring in a few people and, you know, make outrageous charges and leave it at that. Well, those aren't real investigations. And at the New York Times, we're examining, you know, how do we cover this stuff? You know,
yeah, right.
Do we give that oxygen if it's not real? What do we do? It's hard to ignore things, but it does create questions for the media. You know, we don't want to amplify things that sure. are just totally bogus. So yeah. something to keep an eye on going forward.
Very, very important question. So, you know, by the way, I have to say, watching the January 6th special committee in terms of an investigation that was conducted professionally and extremely well, particularly for a television audience, hard to think of a better example.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but it was heavily scripted.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, and I think the Democrats learned a lesson from that, too. The Republicans made a huge mistake in saying they weren't going to participate. So that just gave the Democrats a free hand, and they just buried the January 6th people on that and had this great hearing. And so you're not seeing the Democrats say, hey, we're not going to participate in these witch hunts because they saw what happened. But yeah, I mean, you know, and January 6th goes on, you know, it's a real point of tension between House Democrats and Republicans. And you saw, you know, McCarthy, I'm going to give him credit on this. The other day he was asked about the shooting of Ashley Babbitt, which, you know, in the many Republicans call it murder. And he stuck up for the police officer and said that police officer was doing his job, and it got him blowback. But I give him credit on that, because this is one of those things where Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, you know, they complain about the treatment of the people who are being held in the jail over January 6th. And a lot of people, the Democrats and Americans around the country, are looking at that and saying, you know, why are you defending those folks like that? So January 6th lives on and will continue to be a big dividing point between the parties in the House.
And in fact, that's one of the focuses, looking at the FBI, looking at the Justice Department, looking at the Pentagon, that Jim Jordan says, all related to follow-up to January 6th on this so-called weaponization committee. Carl, you had a great column a couple of weeks ago where the Republicans are saying, well, this is just what Frank Church did back in the 1970s.
Yeah. Right.
Not quite the same.
No, right? I mean, and the Frank Church people who are still around were outraged by that. The Church Committee, there was obviously, this was much in our younger days, Bill, but, you know, there were abuses really bad by the CIA, the FBI, NSA. I mean, there was wholesale spying on Americans and all sorts of things. And that the Church Committee was a very bipartisan effort. And that's where you got the intelligence committees in the House and Senate came out of that. Of course, in that story you're referring to, most people were comparing this more to the Joe McCarthy hearing,
right.
Not the Kevin McCarthy hearings, where, you know, these are just these witch hunts like I have on this piece of paper, you know, the names of 50 FBI agents who have weaponized the government. But, you know, at some point you have to show. You have to deliver something. So if this goes on and they don't really come up with anything, people are going to dismiss it. The FBI, this is also something that's really strikes me. You know, the FBI and the military being attacked by Republicans. The Republicans have always been the staunchest defenders of the FBI and military, even when there were abuses, right? And and it was always the Democrats and the lefties, you know, who were after the authorities. And, you know, but this is all part of this deep state argument. And are there wrongdoers in all these agencies? You bet there are. You bet there are. But I don't know that it's ever going to reach the level of this deep state conspiracy that they seem to think exists, where all these people cooperate. I mean, you know, the government's just not that efficient. It's always like the media conspiracy. That's always made me laugh. I go, you think we're able to conspire? That's amazing. We can barely put out the paper. So I don't know that it's going anywhere. And this is, You know, the one committee that they did create, though, that I do think has legs is this China Competitiveness Committee. Very bipartisan. The Democrats are worried about China, which, you know, is now evidently sending giant balloons over our over our country to spy on us, you know, bring back Gary Powers. And the I think that could actually produce something. And I don't know what power it's going to have to do something, but I, you know, China is a worry. It's a worrisome thing for us. And so I do see cooperation there. The Democrats have put good people on their committee. The Republicans have put solid people on there. So that's one of their special committees that's probably going to produce something.
That does seem to be the one area in Congress today where there is bipartisan cooperation and agreement, right? Taking a tough stand against China. All right, Carl, I can't let you go, though. You mentioned there are things that you've never seen before in all the years you've been covering Congress. I think you started in May 2002, I saw, right?
Well, that was when I became the correspondent for The Times. I've been around Congress. I had different jobs within The Times company. I've really been covering Congress since 1985.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Good for you. So in all those years, have you ever seen anybody like George Santos?
You know, no, because he's a total. But there's been people like this, you know, who had big holes in their resume. I don't you remember there was a guy from Oregon named Wes Cooley. You might remember this is back in the '80s or nineties. And he'd lied about a ton of stuff. And, you know, the more you look, the more it came, but this gentleman, I've just never seen anything like it. It's like he would read something in the paper and then just assign it to himself. He would take on, all these things. Now I see the latest is that he was telling people he was a producer of Spider-Man on Broadway, which was, by the way, a historic flop. So I don't even know why you would want to tell people that. It's just crazy. But here's something that troubles me about this is that he's become a celebrity now, right?
Oh, yeah.
He goes and everybody wants to take selfies and get his autograph, and he's waltzing around. I mean, I see him. He's always passing by me in the hallway up there. And so the fact that he's been able to do this and now that it's somehow elevated him, I don't like that. I mean, I think that needs to be reined in somehow. I think, you know, there's a good chance that he's going to be hit with some kind of criminal charge. I think, you know, because he's got some financial issues. I mean, there's a lot brewing around him, but it's very likely maybe that he could finish his 2 years. I did see, speaking of term limits, I did see that he was wearing a button the other day that supported term limits. And I said, well, he's definitely going to be term limited because I don't think he can win re-election in his district or any district.
Why doesn't Kevin McCarthy come out?
He needs the vote. He needs that guy. He needs the vote. I mean, he can't lose any votes, you know, because what is it, 4-vote margin or something. And if he, you know, he's got a member from Florida who's been laid up with some injuries. So he's down a little bit there. You know, there's 435 people in there. During the course of 2 years, people get sick, some die, some pick other jobs. I mean, he doesn't want to give that vote up unless he absolutely has to. But they did keep him off committees because that was going to look pretty bad as they were throwing Democrats off committees. You're going to put this guy on a committee, but you know, I always say there is precedent for certain things, but so far on this one, I've seen people lie about their backgrounds, but not the wholesale lying that's involved here.
So what do you think?
He's a fiction of himself.
What do you think, Carl? Do you have the best job in the world?
I mean, it's I've had one of them.
You know, people go, I think you do.
Why do you do it? And I said, well, you always see something you didn't see before. And, you know, but it's also, though, I will say in this environment, these are hard jobs now. You know, there's a lot of public criticism and, you know, you get. No matter what, you get criticized, and you know you have to. My goal is always to be as accurate as I can and make sure that I tell people what's going on and be straight about it. Because if you make the slightest error these days, boy, people come after you. There's a guy on Twitter, his thing is called Typos of the New York Times, right? One guy out there who just reads every story and picks out your typos. So, I mean, that's the kind of job we have.
If that's the only mistake you make, that's not too bad, huh? Yeah. Well, we're glad you're there, Carl, and especially grateful for your taking the time to join us today to give us some insights into the 118th Congress. Carl, good to talk to you. We'll see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bill.
And that's a wrap for today's podcast with Carl Hulse. Follow him in the New York Times for all the best information about what's happening in the Congress. We'll be back on Friday with our roundtable. Lots to talk about because this week we've got the State of the Union. Then President Biden and the Vice President, Kamala Harris, are going to go around the country in a little victory tour to talk about all the things they've accomplished, including 517,000 new jobs in the month of January. Hey, we'll also take a look at the Republican responding to the State of the Union. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, new governor of Arkansas, former White House press secretary, and some people are saying that this appearance will be her audition to be Donald Trump's vice presidential running mate in 2024, God forbid. At any rate, it's going to make for a lively roundtable this Friday. Have a great week, folks. Come back Friday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.